Welcome to the White House. Thanks for coming here to the Roosevelt Room. At this table, we have some great leaders, and in this country, we also have some talented students, world-class universities, engineers, inventors, entrepreneurs. But our competitiveness depends on training and producing even more of these people. Today, about 60% of all basic research is funded by the federal government. But the federal research and development spending has dropped steadily since 2004. And in real terms, federal investment in research dropped every year since 2008. That's why we made sure the Recovery Act included more than $18 billion to fund research and development in universities like the ones represented here today at this table. This investment in basic research came on top of roughly $62 billion in annual federal research and development funding for each of the last 2 years, nearly a 30% increase from 2009 budget. And this is among the most critical parts of our recovery spending because it's the investments in the future, an investment that's going to pave the way for a new American economy, the new building blocks in which we're going to build our economy in the 21st century. And out of a lot of this research, literally we'll see, and we'll be talking about the 10, 20 years from now, entire new industries will spring. In fact, the economists will tell you that for every dollar of science funding, we actually produce two or more dollars of economic goods and services in the overall economy. And consider the work represented just at this table. The University of California and Johns Hopkins are part of a Cancer Genome Atlas project, which studies the DNA of cancers, which has the potential of accelerating drug development and improving diagnosis and treatment of 20 types of cancer. As we'll talk about later, that's up from studying 3 types of cancer. And the economic impact, if it succeeds, is astronomical in terms of healthcare costs. The team at Purdue University is conducting research that would use chemical reactions to directly convert plant biomass, and that's the bulk of the plant, into biofuels that closely resemble gasoline. And I'm going to ask the president about what the consequences would be if, in fact, the best expectations occur. It could be literally groundbreaking for the economy. The Washington State University is studying and participating in an effort to make the city of Pullman the region's first smart grid community, where they allow the area to control the use of energy in ways that are much more efficient, much more productive, and much cheaper. The University of Florida researchers are studying how to harness solar energy and waste heat to actually run refrigeration systems. Researchers at the University of Pennsylvania, meanwhile, are studying the neurodegenerative disorders. This research is studying the long-term neurological effects of antiretroviral drugs taken by HIV patients, both what the effects are and, ultimately, how can we avoid the harmful effects. Folks, this is where the future lies, the future of healthcare and, quite frankly, the future of energy production in this country. And that's the basis of what we're going to, a significant part of the 21st century economy will rest upon. This administration has made these investments because we believe that our new economic future will grow from ideas that are incubating in universities around the country. And that's the breeding ground. And by the way, it's always been that way. I'm always amazed by some of my colleagues who suggest we shouldn't be investing in this. What would have happened had Eisenhower not decided that an outfit called ARPA should be put in place, and had the ARPANET not ever been generated by a $25 million investment there, which ultimately ended up in the internet, and ultimately ended up in 1.7 billion people using it, generating hundreds of billions of dollars in commerce and trade. So this is nothing new, what we're doing. Yet some of our critics act like we're coming up with some new social intervention here. It's the way in which, all the way back to Abraham Lincoln, decided to give, in the middle of the Civil War, $16,000 in treasury bonds for every mile of intercontinental railroad that was built. So the rest of the world gets this, and we can't afford to lag behind the rest of the world. We rank only 8th in the world in R&D investments as a percentage of our GDP, behind countries like South Korea and Japan. And take the energy part of this. As a percent of GDP, federal investment in energy R&D is one-tenth of what it was during the Carter administration. One-tenth of what it was during the Carter administration, leaving us 12th among 12 of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development countries that are engaged in this effort. There was a study that came out last year looking at all the factors that go into what makes a nation competitive, and research and development was one of them. The study found the United States did less than any other country to improve our position over the last decade. We literally ranked 40th out of 40 countries that took part in this study. You know who was number one? It would not be every one of the listeners or the press here or the readers would be able to tell you. China. China was number one. Other countries all ahead of us include, believe it or not, Cyprus, Lithuania, South Korea. This is unacceptable. If we don't put our resources into research and development to make us more competitive, companies are going to continue to invest overseas, jobs are going to continue to be shipped overseas, and the U.S. will not be able to lead the 21st century in anything remotely like it did in the 20th century. It's that simple in my view. We cannot afford not to rededicate ourselves to supporting the work all the people around this table do. Look, we know government can't do what you guys can do, nor the private sector can do. We don't expect it to be that. We kind of view it as priming the pump. We view it as seed money. We view it as an investment in the brightest minds in the world tackling the biggest problems the world now faces. But what the federal government can do, and historically great presidents have done, is provide a vision for the country, setting goals, and providing seed money to encourage money and private investment off the sidelines to be engaged in a way they otherwise would not engage, or at least would not engage at the time that is needed. So we have to let colleges, universities make these visions a reality. I'd like to give you an example. The work we funded on the cancer genome atlas, which much of which happened at Johns Hopkins and the University of California, we know that cancer is one of the leading killers in the United States and a huge driver of medical cost. We know that some of the most innovative, potentially promising work being done to combat this disease was the effort to try to map the genome of cancer, just like we did the human genome a decade ago. Well, prior to the Recovery Act, there was a pilot program that was working to map the genome for three cancers that affect a total of 300,000 Americans. So we invested here, giving you the tools to extend this promising program to more cancers that affect significantly more Americans. And today, thanks to the Recovery Act funding, the smartest minds across the country are performing this work on breast cancer, colon cancer, gastric cancer, brain cancer, and approximately 20 other types of cancer. In total, is it estimated that more than 10 million Americans will be affected by the 20-plus types of cancer to be studied in the way it was only previously studied in three, a 33-fold increase over the 300,000 affected by the three cancers studied in the pilot program. And even if part of this breaks through, the consequences for the country, not just in terms of human lives, but in terms of the economic consequences, are significant. But it's not just about scientific advancement tomorrow. It's about actual economic growth today. What Dr. Holden and I, at least I most often get answered, is, okay, this is all good, but the economy is in really tough shape right now. We can't afford to be looking down the road. We got to look at today. Well, the fact of the matter is, the research you are doing and your colleagues in other universities across the country is actually generating economic growth today. Earlier this summer, the Council of Economic Advisors reported the Recovery Act supported research projects. Only the Recovery Act supported research projects that I'm talking about here are responsible for over 50,000 jobs thus far. And today's jobs have become tomorrow's whole new industries. And we've already begun to see it, by the way. For example, A123 is a battery company that I visited out in the Midwest. They started a federally supported project at MIT. Now, they're a company that employs 1,700 people in the Midwest and is actually leading the advance of battery technology that is going to move us from producing 2% of the world's lithium-ion batteries to power vehicles in the 21st century to 40% within the next couple years. Cree, a company named Cree, is another one of these examples. They make LED lighting in Raleigh, North Carolina. I was down there last year, sat with a young CEO. They started at North Carolina State with the support of the Department of Defense. Now they employ 3,100 people in jobs and in an industry of the future. And with a few tax breaks we were given, which have been called 48C, they've been able to keep those jobs in the United States of America. I'm looking forward to hearing about how the Recovery Act is helping you and your institutions, and how we can help people understand and see how important the investment in research being made through the Recovery Act truly is. And I'm looking forward to figuring out how we can continue to ensure that you can educate tomorrow's leaders and help us build a stronger economy for the 21st century. The President said it when we were talking about, and while I was in Baghdad a little while ago, as we were changing our mission. And he pointed out, at the end of the day, all of what we do worldwide depends upon strong economic growth at home. And what I would argue, without continued investment in research and development, we are going to be in a position we're not going to be able to lead in the 21st century. We want to help people see what this is doing for our economy now and what its potential to do in the days ahead. Now, my part, my job is introducing a few presidents here. I'm used to dealing with presidents around this table, John Hunt, and usually he sits right here and I sit there and John and I ask him questions occasionally. But the truth of the matter is, first I'd like to introduce Franz Cordova, the president of Purdue University. Purdue is known as the cradle of the astronauts for very good reason. They've sent 22 graduates into space. My university thinks we've sent as many into space, but in a different way. I'm one of them. But including Neil Armstrong. Purdue alumni have flown on 37% of all the human U.S. space flights. In 2007, the Boilermakers continued that tradition by looking into the stars, choosing a former chief scientist at NASA, Dr. Cordova, as their leader. So, Doctor, I'd like to hear a little bit about space, but I'd like to hear a lot more about what it is that you're doing at Purdue that's going to generate this kind of change. And then, I don't know how long the press is going to be here, but Amy Gutman, good friend, is going to talk about what's going on at the University of Pennsylvania. And then we're going to hear an open discussion with all the rest of the players here. And Mr. McPherson and Mr. Berto represent other research universities in the nation, as well as land-grant colleges as well. And they're going to be all part of the discussion. This is the beginning of what we want to do is to lay down a marker that science is back in the White House, and that we are absolutely committed to using the resources of the federal government of setting a vision and providing the seed money for you all to help us literally change the world. And that's what you're about. So thank you very much. I'm going to yield to you, Doctor.
Mr. Vice President, thank you very much for inviting me to join you with these distinguished colleagues. As noted, I hail from Purdue University, home of the Boilermakers. Purdue is the land-grant university of Indiana, and you mentioned President Lincoln and his investment in the railroads. There was another investment that happened at that time, of course, with the Morrill Act and the creation of the land-grant universities. And in fact, we were born, the university was, of a private-public partnership with the great gift of John Purdue, and then the government investment to create the university. At any one time, 74,000 students are entrusted to us.
74,000?
74,000, 40,000 on the main campus, and then we have several regional campuses. We educate and prepare them for the jobs of the future. In fact, you mentioned about making tomorrow's leaders. Actually, our motto, because of our space heritage, is launching tomorrow's leaders. We do aim high. Last week, the Wall Street Journal listed Purdue among the top four universities in this country for corporate recruiters because of our preparation of students for the workforce. We're also Indiana's fifth largest employer, and last year our economic impact on the state was over $4 billion. We're able to benefit both our students and our state and nation because of our talented faculty and researchers and their ability to compete effectively for research funding. As you have so eloquently said, this funding leads to the discoveries and the inventions that fuel economic development. This past year, Purdue's research awards were augmented with 174 Recovery Act awards, which totaled more than $130 million. I'd like to give you just a few examples of how these awards are benefiting our state and our nation. Indiana, which is often called the crossroads of America, that's what's on our quarter, is facing declines in many traditional industries, including manufacturing and automotive. Thus, we're happy to be part of a private-public partnership with Cummins Engine, in which we're working on energy-efficient and clean combustion for heavy trucks using Recovery Act funding from the Department of Energy. This should improve heavy-duty freight efficiency by about 50%. Also with DOE ARRA funding, Purdue is leading a partnership of Indiana universities in an advanced electric vehicle education and training program. This will help ensure students are prepared for the future green jobs in the automotive industry. Recovery Act funding from NIST will fund a center for high-performance buildings at Purdue's Herrick Laboratories. In the United States, buildings are responsible for roughly 40% of primary energy usage, 71% of electricity, and 38% of the country's CO2 emissions. Also, we know that many Americans suffer from being in closed-up buildings and being indoors for too long. So this center is focused on developing knowledge, technologies, processes, and integrated solutions to ensure high-performance systems and environments. And that means good occupant health and productivity and sustainability and security. Recovery Act support from the National Institutes of Health for Purdue's multidisciplinary cancer research facility will help our biomedical researchers and engineers develop new models for preventing, diagnosing, and treating cancer. It's worth noting the impact and underlining what you said about job creation, Mr. Vice President. The Recovery Act requires that we report on jobs created through these Recovery Act research awards every 3 months. For Purdue's first $21.5 million of expenditures as of last June 30th, we reported 210 FTE jobs created or retained. That's a factor of 10 to $1 million, and 600 people who spent some amount of time on these projects. So we're finding that for every $1 million of Recovery Act funding, about 10 FTE jobs are directly created and 18 more are indirectly impacted. Finally, it's worth emphasizing that the knowledge that's created today through this research stimulus funding will lead to even greater impact in the jobs in the future. I'll leave you with the last example of Recovery Act funding to Purdue that illustrates this point, and it's one that you brought up. Purdue is leading a collaboration with the National Renewable Energy Labs and Argonne to convert biomass to bioenergy through a catalytic process. This would more than double the carbon captured into fuel from biomass over existing technologies, a worthy goal. This approach calls for integrating advances in nanotechnology, chemical engineering, material sciences, molecular biology, and high-resolution instrumentation. We're actually changing the plants themselves, the whole plant, to be much more converters into bioenergy. The partnership will engage corporate partners too for new technology deployment. I'd like to close my remarks, Mr. Vice President, by thanking the taxpayers for their investment in research and education.
Thank you very much. Madam President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. On behalf of all the presidents here and every American who has benefited from higher education, I want to thank you and the President for taking such a strong interest in not only the future of higher education, but the future of our country. One of the founding fathers of our nation, Benjamin Franklin, who also happens to be the founder of the University of Pennsylvania, famously said that an investment in knowledge pays the greatest dividends. The stimulus funding has created new knowledge and new jobs that are truly life-saving and life-enhancing. Penn is the largest private employer in Philadelphia. We employ 31,000 people. In the Great Recession, had it not been for the stimulus funding, we would have had to cut jobs. Instead, we were able to create, through stimulus funding alone, over 1,100 job opportunities. 700 in research and 400 in construction and the ancillary activities that go on in our facilities that the stimulus funding made possible. That's the immediate effect. Let me tell you about several discoveries that have been made possible by stimulus funding that not only bring promise today, but are very likely, along with the thousands of other discoveries that are happening in our university's labs, to save literally millions of lives in the future. So today is World Alzheimer's Day. With stimulus funds, Dr. Gerard Schellenberg at Penn is developing a new way of gathering data that will unlock the secrets of Alzheimer's. It is, at the very moment, unlocking secrets of Alzheimer's. Now, we don't have a cure for Alzheimer's, but this kind of knowledge is critical to finding a cure one day. As you know and mentioned, cancer is the second largest cause of death among Americans. Penn's Center for Comparative Effectiveness in Genomic Medicine is developing, with stimulus funds, new ways to prevent, to diagnose, and to treat cancer based on the markers in the human genome. Those discoveries of the human genome were made possible by other universities sitting around this table, but those have made it possible with stimulus funds to find the precise markers in the human genome that track cancer. Third, heart disease is the single largest cause of death in our country. Dr. Daniel Rader at our School of Medicine has recently identified several genes linked to heart disease. And that discovery will be published next week in the journal Nature. And because of the public open access to all the discoveries, will no doubt generate more discoveries that will unlock the possible ways of preventing and curing heart disease. And finally, I'd just like to say there are other diseases that afflict many Americans, perhaps not as much as cancer, heart disease, and Alzheimer's, but they also mean that we will be able to understand and cure diseases down the road that are now afflicting our members of our own family, friends. There is not a person who is unaffected by this. So let me give you a final example. ALS. Also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. A team of Penn doctors and biologists, led by Dr. Aaron Gittler, who is working with doctors across the country, has identified the genetic risk factors for ALS, again with the help of stimulus funding. So let me just conclude by saying, as true as it was 250 years ago that an investment in knowledge pays the greatest interest, it is much truer today. Every stimulus dollar has not only generated jobs, but we have done a study to show that those 1,100 jobs have a multiplier effect of 4 in the regional and national economy. an investment in knowledge through the stimulus has generated current jobs, it has generated current discoveries to attack and understand the biggest causes of human death in this country, and it will also, and as importantly, pay great dividends in the future. I thank you again for being such a great supporter of what is necessary to make our economy recover and make this country a true generator of knowledge for the benefit of humankind.
Well, I want to thank you both. Look, we're going to have a pretty detailed discussion here, and I hope we're going to be able to come back to the press.